Yhteistyössä Helsinki Design Week.
His works are frequently presented in prestigious exhibitions and museums all over the world. And his creations also feature in many renowned public and private collections, such as the MoMA in New York, the Centre Pompidou in Paris, and the Art Institute of Chicago, demonstrating his long-lasting impact on contemporary design. And today, he's in Punavuori with me. His name is Erwan Bulek, my name is Anni Korkman, and the program is called Helsinki Design Weekly. Welcome to Helsinki Design Weekly, Erwan Bulek.
Thank you very much.
Is this your first time in Helsinki?
No, I've been there a couple of times, and first time was something like 20 years ago.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And how are you finding it?
I really, in general, I feel really attracted by, I would say, Scandinavian countries. And sorry for that, because I was kind of checking the distance in between Helsinki to Copenhagen, for example, which is quite wide. I really have a natural attraction for, I guess what I like the more in Helsinki is this kind of absence of too much of I would say decoration. To me, Nordic countries, they really somehow, I can read them a little bit like Protestant country, yes. Which has a very, in reality, it's creating a very different aesthetic all around. I like it very much. I mean, I like it very much for what I know.
That's very nice to hear. Let's go to the beginning. So you were born in Quimper in France. I'd like to know if you were a very typical designer child, always interested in how things are built and made, or maybe you were always drawing.
Yes and no. One thing is, I come from a family where there would be no architect, no artist, no designer, no pen. I mean, there would be some pens, but no pen for drawings. But it was a pure agricultural background. I grew in the countryside. I grew up in the countryside, and my grandparents, a lot of aunts and uncles from me, were farmers, and a farm is a kind of incredible tiny factory, if you would say. There is a lot of making. There are some typical, let's say, practice from everyday farming, but there are also some more exceptional practice, like making a building or building a fence or bringing some water somewhere. Now I more and more understand the way all this kind of farming environment has been a lot indicating me many simple things about shapes, colors, proportion, ways of making. And then on the other side, I was a computer kid because I was on the countryside. I had few friends. I mean, not like a town boy. So I used to play a lot of video games. So it was a kind of a strange mix of video games, looking at farmers. And at the end, probably one of my, let's say, strongest education about making things was indie music. I was listening a lot of indie music. I guess that was my way to be a teenager, dreams of things, and find a way not to be similar to other ones. And to finish all of this, I've been learning to draw with a woman, and I started with her when I was six, 7 years old, and ended up when I was, let's say, 15, 16, before going to art school. And I've been learning a lot with a it was some outside activities outside of school. I guess I used to go to football too, but then I was going, I was also learning to draw. And since I was a kid, yes, I had a pen, I had some paints, I could do many things. It's been very important in my education.
And do you still draw daily? Do you sketch?
One thing is, I stopped drawing on paper probably 10 years ago. Now I'm drawing nearly only on iPad. I quite like this kind of touch on an iPad. I like the use of colors also. I like also to do some computer coding sometime. I don't really have. It's the same. I'm reading a lot, but I'm reading on iPad, and then I've got everyone saying, "Okay, you don't draw on paper," and how come you could read a book, you could read a novel on an iPad, and I don't have such kind of nostalgia in a way. Those are my stuff. It's not something I would recommend for everyone. Do anything that you do, but I don't. And for work. In reality, main of my work is very mental. Everything I draw is just one way to kind of record what I'm thinking about. So it's not something that you could exactly exploit as a drawing. They don't have the, let's say, 100% their own nature. It's more to follow my thinking.
Of course. And what about music? Is music still present? Indie music?
Well, I have to say, only the old ones. Yeah. For some years, I guess music is this, or at least for me, is this kind of thing. It's just like it's very stuck in time. I've got a countryside place for a couple of years, and I've been organizing some student workshop that always end up into a party, and I've been always dreaming of DJing. So in this time, I'm the only one putting the music. They're asking for, and for many reasons, I'm not giving them the access. But no music is still the old one. It's Pixies, Radiohead, Pavement, many things.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm a little bit stuck in time for this.
You mentioned students, and I want to know, because you studied your studies in art.
Yes.
Were you a good student? How were you in uni?
Yeah, it's been always, I was always the best in class, it's okay to be the best in class when you are 15, 16 year old, because, and then when I went to the art school, I was also the best in class. But in principle, in the art school, you should become wild. You shouldn't be the best in class. But no, I think I've always made exactly what the teacher expected from me, and they all loved me all the time. I was always a very good pupil, which is, I guess, a security in life.
Yeah, and that has worked quite well for you.
I don't know if it worked well or not. It just is one thing that sometimes I need is I need a little bit too much control. I need a little bit I need to understand the environment, who I am, and I don't let myself be sometimes wild enough. Mm. I'm such kind of guy, and and I always admire, you know, people that have got some very strange paths. Mm. I guess that's the best thing that can that you can have in your life. It's just this ability to see the world as a jungle a little, you know, like nothing is organized. But me, I'm a little bit too organized from this point of view.
After then graduating in 1998, you joined a studio founded by your brother Ronan. You worked together for a long time, but now you concentrate on independent projects. Today, you mentioned you have another place, but so you're based between Paris and Burgundy?
Yeah,
is that correct?
Exactly.
And you work in both places, or the other one is for free time?
Well, no, I would consider I work in both places. For sure, Paris is still the main area, but the place in Burgundy literally is an old farm. And down there, it's perfect to do certain things. One of the things is that downstairs we can also do some kind of experiment, prototyping, whatever, in any kind of scale, and also with any kind of ways of making. And there is something like, because I've seen a lot through farming, I've been also learning quite a lot of rough making. In a farm is what you see most of the time. Nobody would exactly spend time to do something 100% properly. Mm-hmm. There will be always a certain kind of a need of being quick, being efficient, also just do exactly what needs to be done with what you have on sight. It's what I've seen with my uncles. They could do many things, you know. You would give them hammer, nails, welding machine, some concrete and some bricks, and they would really do a lot of things. So in reality, they would do it most of the time a little bit too quickly, and for sure they would hate any kind of idea that would be based on something beautiful, decorative, or whatever. To do something that would be a need for a reason, a big, big reason. And the reason would be a new house for the pigs, bringing some water down to the field, adding this fence, or putting some electricity somewhere. Nothing would be... I've got a kind of sorry, I don't find the word in English. I've got a kind of nostalgia, I could say, of this rough making. So when I'm in the place in Burgundy, I can do quite a lot of rough making. I've always had this thing in me that I can't think for a really long period about doing something, and then I'm gonna do it within hours. I will do it very, very roughly. And when I would do it roughly on site, most of the time I would do it with what I have. I'm not exactly planning them. I would never do a technical drawing before. I would measure everything while doing it. And I would never take the time to make it properly, which means like I would glue, but very quickly. I wouldn't clean, I wouldn't do a number of things. And if I'm doing this, it's also because I know inside this practice lies a very pure language. I'm looking for kind of a language which would be a little driven by a kind of a necessity. So that is the opportunity of the countryside against the town. Paris, things need to be a little bit more organized, and then we've got some much more delicate tool in Paris, computer modeling, 3D printers, we can access to any kind of things, we can access to, any kind of colors if we're looking for something or whatever. So I always have this balance, Paris versus, let's say, the countryside.
It sounds ideal to have at the countryside, to have a genuine freedom of expression, looking for the essential language of your work, and
yes,
then to balance it with...
Yes, so because something like right now I feel more and more, I think one of the pity of the world we live in is unfortunately people have less and less, I would say, interaction with very pure things, with the materiality of the thing. And even we're also surrounded by many, we are in a civilization now where we are surrounded by many fake. I remember this winter we had been renting a place to go to ski, and I've been counting that there was at least 20 different kind of fake wood in the house. There would be a fake wood in metal, there would be a fake wood in plastics, there would be a printed fake wood, there would be...
Yeah, wallpapers.
The floor was a ceramic wood floor. I mean, it was... And so right now, I really believe it's super, super important to make things with the real thing, so that, let's say, features that surround us become transparent, that your eyes doesn't have any issue reading them, because if your eyes, if your brain, your instinctive brain doesn't understand what surrounds them, we're not doing good to the monkey that lives inside us. Inside us, there is a monkey, and the monkey needs to jump. He needs to go on a tree. So the monkey really needs to that the environment is what it is. I mean, at least looks like the way it is. So sometimes, yes, to go to this rough making is to make sure that there is no opportunity to fake anything.
Enhancing material literacy can also be seen as quite an important thing, even from the perspective of conscious consumption, for us to really understand where the objects are coming from and how they are made.
Yes, it's. I mean, even if you just go a little bit deeper inside this, is literally to enjoy, meaning like there is really a magic when someone is doing something for someone. And we forget that most of the everything that surrounds us, a glass, a computer, a sofa, a mirror, a toothbrush, is still behind it. There is a very kind of a positive action, somebody doing something with care for someone. So now the somebody and the someone are very far away. They're far from being identified. We don't know. But probably 100 years ago, already things were much more clear. I remember my grandparents telling, like, they had been ordering their table from the wood maker. And when they ordered the table to the woodmaker, one of the best things that probably happened is that they probably had a discussion, which is, we want a table, we've got this wood. And then the woodmaker probably said, okay, but if you want it this way, it's going to last as long. Or if you want it this way, it's going to be this price. And if you want it this way, maybe I don't have exactly the right tool at the time. So there was just a discussion which was based on empathy on both of us, exactly. Or let's say both of them. Okay, what do we need? What can you do? And what is the best, let's say, balance to find in between our needs and your need and everything? What I feel we could like some more now, just a little bit of empathy to the maker, to the user, understand better and enjoy this time of empathy.
To see design and the act of making something as an act of generosity and care.
Well, at least, design is as old as mankind. That's always been there. Some people getting organized to do something, some people acquiring the thing, and this is one of the probably strongest, let's say, factor of civilization. Design is really here to. There is one thing in design is most of the time carrying the signs that make us able to live together. Behind the coffee cup design, that's the only real function is to say welcome. Okay, there is one function which is please hold the coffee, please make sure that I'm not hurting myself with the hot coffee. Yes, but the real function behind it is to be able to say, okay, please have a sit, let's discuss. And this is everywhere. In design, we're kind of fleshing culture. And the way you flesh culture make people able to interact one way or another. And there are some environments in which you feel very naturally welcome. Again, it's I've got for the past year, I got more and more into rethinking of my childhood and the farm and things like this. And it's true that for me, the kitchen my grandparents had was a very welcoming environment. It was very welcoming of any kind of different people, and also very welcoming of different activities. I remember this, like it could be like my grandmother would be some kind of accounting on the table. I would play next to her, and my grandfather, I don't know, would kind of repair anything or do something. So it was a naturally welcoming environment, welcoming for any kind of activities. And this way of welcoming people is very fundamental to, again, let us live, think, enjoy. And there are so many other environments in which you're not welcome. You can go in a super chic hotel, but then sometime in a super chic hotel, you're just afraid of doing any kind of mistake. You would do a mistake by pouring some coffee. You do a mistake if you would have literally wearing the wrong colors or having a dirty shoes or something like this. So this way of inputting into object some kind of rules is something that needs to be literally, it really needs to be treated with a lot of respect for different kind of people, mankind. And design from this point of view is a kind of a special practice, because on one hand you absolutely need to link design with the past. You need to link design with a certain ways of tradition, if you wish. That is where you are connecting to the way people live, certain positive rules that we have in between us. But also you need to make sure that design is kind of at least not reactionary, not something that is blocking the people in a certain way, because mankind needs to evolve. And sometimes I have to say, like, sometimes I find a little bit too much good taste in design. things are a little bit too
polished.
Too polished. And maybe it's relatively easy for us, Western countries, to say, okay, things could last as they were. But the world is much more complex than this, I think. So design also needs to bring a kind of openness, sometimes a certain surprise, and mixing all of this, connecting to the past, building the surprise, and all of this within a kind of a commercial environment can sometimes be a little tricky.
Let's talk more about your process and your work, your approach, but first we'll take a very little break.
Yhteistyössä Helsinki Design Week.
You're listening to Helsinki Design Weekly. My name is of course Anni Korkman, and this afternoon I have the pleasure of having Ervan Burulek as my guest in the studio. Let's talk about the everyday. What is your typical working day like?
My working day like start with a couple of cigarettes. that's a problem. But I just start by, I don't know if thinking is a good word, but trying to, because the real thing in design is a kind of a process in which you should always do less. One of the very important force in manufacturing in general is to do less, and to my point of view, for quite good reason. Just like you produce in quantity, you try to be. But in the process of designing itself, when you've been starting to build something, in reality, the best thing you could do is try to remove something. Mm. It's not to add. So already one thing is made of few things, but really few. If you look at a chair, it's probably going to be 2, 3, 4, 5 material maximum. It's not going to be a lot of shapes. It's not going to be a lot of element. And so you try to take something out more. Take something out more.
Mm. I mean, no, makes what, sense. Yeah.
It said less is more. That is, sure. I never really got the point of exactly the sentence, but it's. The day starts by kind of thinking. And then inside the thinking, part of it is active and part of it is a little bit of stress. Are we in time? Do we control things?
Sure.
Are we providing the right thing? Also because I'm working sometimes with quite large companies and there are a lot of people engaged.
Lots of rules.
Yeah. And we have this kind of a strange job that engineers, they have the luck of having a very defined practice. They're given the things to solve in a way, and they solve it in their manner. We have to kind of bring a certain elegance everywhere. Mm-hmm. And elegance is far from being something that you could easily kind of, let's say, identify, value, measure, and so sometimes we're not most efficient in a way. Sometimes we are bringing some dops, you know, like the other ones are bringing a yes and no, and we bring a maybe, and everybody's turning at us during the meeting. How come you'd say maybe, say yes or no? It's just gonna be more. Well, it's a joke, it's not the thing. But so starting of the day is more thinking, a little. And then I've got a super cool studio with most of the people with me are younger than me. Oldest employee is Philippe, is 10 years with me, more or less. But Philippe is living in Lyon, so he's 100% out of the studio. Mm-hmm. So most of the time I'm spending 1 hour per day on the phone with him and discussing and doing things. Then I've got Quentin, who can do some very, very, very precise drawings. I can really go into a subject for months, for years, and do it with a lot of strength all along. So the thing you can. One thing you need to agree on in design is you need to wait. Things are not going to happen in a minute. It's even if it's made up of a few things, because you collaborate and because most of the time it's the time of industry. The time of industry is not like you're not clicking like this and things going to be realized. So you need to wait. You need to carefully listen. You need to sum up. Again, and then you need to be very creative on tiny, tiny things. So Quentin can do this, and then come all the girls, Emily, Denise, Victorine. Well, I say all the girls, and they come after. But it's because the men were are older, so I took in the age of the thing. But Emily, then she's providing some incredible pictures in general. She has really a very beautiful exercise of colors, textures. Victorine, she's an incredible maker. One of the first tasks she got at the studio was to do some very, very, very precise stitching for a cover for a chair, and she was very young, and I explained everything it should be, and actually I was lying to her, because when I've been asking everything it should be, I was adding some more things that to my point of view were probably impossible, but because she was young and because she was hands-on, she just took the task. And I guess like she probably never approached a stitching machine before, maybe a few hours in her life. Then for months she's been stitching, and a month after we had an incredible prototype, wow, which I've been bringing to industry. I mean, to the company we were working with, I said, okay, Victorine has been doing this, when this factory had already been doing some prototype and said, we can't do it better. And then with Victorine bringing the things in, everybody went back to work and do it again. And actually, yeah, everything got transformed by this prototype. This prototype has never been the final thing. But, and there, when I said in the farm, I can do rough thing, it was for me very intentional to ask to Victorine that doesn't know anything about stitching to do stitching, because she doesn't know, she had to learn very quickly, and because she learned very quickly, she's been through the basic. You can't, when you are learning quickly, you're not gonna go to the extreme of the technique. You need to go, and one thing, when you are going through the basics, it means that you're going to connect the design to the past, because then the stitching would be so obvious. And so any kind of monkey around you will actually see exactly that's the stitching. I know what this is. And because the monkey knows the stitching, he say, cool, I can jump on it. I can do anything on it. That's the thing. So that's Victorine. And Denise, now she arrived in the studio a year ago, and everybody loves her, just like participating to everything. So everybody is kind of interacting all together. Some people are a little bit, you know, everybody is more engaged in one project, and some projects are a little bit more demanding in terms of I would say, a structure, organization. In some project are lighter, but everybody interacts. And the studio is a two-level studio. And on the top floor, under the roof, where we have a lot of lights, here are the computers, the musics, and things, and we do the things. And downstairs, it's a kind of open area with a couple of machines, with a couple of things. But in this new studio I've been building since me and Ronan, we split it, the studio, I went to some more lightweight machine. I wanted to have a little bit more emptiness, I could say. I don't want to have the studio full of stuff. I wanted, yes, to be more lightweight.
Makes sense. So you talked about the people you work with at your studio, also clients, big companies. I wonder, how do you feel about collaboration in total? Is it natural for you? Is it easy for you to share, for example, your unfinished thoughts or initial ideas, or make changes to your plans?
So I studied really fine arts. So when I was a young person, everything for me I would read it through art. So there would be some super important figure like minimal art, also some painters, and for me art was always and is always a very important tool that our society need to literally build on some very new ways. I think art is a fundamental tool for, you know, for example, to our society to understand that people can be gay, for example. I'm sure art has been doing a lot of things. You first need some people to sing it, to do some representation and things like this. Art is this kind of very extreme ways of exploring some fields that society needs to integrate in a way. And art is a kind of a practice in which you are very consciously using the brain of the people. I mean, no art, I mean, one piece of art is always revealed by your brain, just by the kind of a question the art piece is working with you. But this being said, when I was in the art school, I've been starting to practice some design for me and also helping Ronan. And one thing that I just discovered, that in design I would never be alone. Artists are incredibly lonely in a way. And me, I love this kind of collectiveness in design. I've been doing this chair recently with Vitra, in which for 4 years we've been doing super interesting works of design linguist engineering. And actually it was more or less 5 person, me and Quentin, and then Stefan, Noah, and Eugen in front, engineering. And the way we've been building together has been great. And again, as I said at the beginning, still behind design is this very old practice of humanity. Some people getting organized to do something that possibly some people would acquire for very simple question, very simple needs. And there I find a very kind of, I love this feeling. I love this, I love inside design, there is always this idea of goodwill in a certain way. I try to do it good, try to do it together for the people who are making it and for the people who are using it. And so to come back to art, yes, maybe one thing that you don't have in design is a kind of nobody should ever think about design. Okay, some people you could think about it, but as an end user, why would you think about your environment? You're not going to think every day about the plate, the table, the chair. It's more like, it's a little bit like we would create an environment. And then people, let's say, would build on this environment. It's very different, again, of a piece of art, because a piece of art then gets only realized when your mind is getting a little stuck with it, and think about it and in a way transform it, make it happen. I quite like this kind of a silent language of design. That's my thing. And even if still I've got a lot of respect and desire for art, it's not something I'm practicing. So collectiveness, to my point of view, is a little bit the opposite of loneliness. Loneliness has this kind of radicality, and collectiveness needs to be a little bit more democratic in a way. Agrees with a number of things, and I quite like this, agreeing with things.
Yes. So you mentioned the chair that you've been designing for Vitra, which also brings you to Helsinki now. It's called Mint.
Yeah.
Could you tell or introduce the chair, maybe to someone who hasn't seen it? What's it like?
Well, it's a chair that has a lot of movement. So your body goes inside it and literally, let's say, moves very naturally on the chair and with the chair. So when you listen to this, you could think of a task chair, you could think of an office chair, and Vitra is a very important, let's say, office furniture manufacturer. But the name the code name we gave to the project was a very simple task chair. I'm very happy because we managed to make it, yes, incredibly simple. And again, sometimes behind simplicity is one way to address a much wider language. And one thing that I hate most of the time about, let's say, just the opposite of now, you see a lot of chairs for gamers. I don't know if you've seen the chair for gamers.
Yes, I have.
So the chair for gamers have been taking more or less some seat coming from the car ID. They've been putting all the adjustment as possible. Plus also the gamers, you know, they've got the LED lighted keyboard and with everything.
Maybe
and
a place
everything.
For your energy drink.
Yes, everything. And it might be great for gamers, or at least it's great for the people that are acquiring it. I mean, I hope so. But one thing is, it's not universal. That's the thing. The Mint chair is exactly the opposite, meaning like, if you look at it, you barely kind of identify it to a chair that would move. You barely identify it to something on which your body would have so much freedom. So one thing is, again, to try to, let's say, create something that is very, very universal. And that nobody minds about, am I the right person to use it? Or am I using it the right way? But then providing a super cool performance of seating. Because then when you sit on it, it's kind of, most of office chair, it's been a lot of evolution of movement in office chair. One of the main last big things was at the beginning of the 80s, of course, the synchronized movement, which make like the backrest of a chair and the seat are kind of moving in a synchronized method, which is basically organized around some mechanics under the chair. And when we designed the min chair, for some reason, we've been using some of the basics of those mechanics, but we've been unsynchronizing the seat from the backrest, which means like the seat has a kind of independent movement, which is partially kind of controlled by the backrest, but not 100%. All of this means that the chair has a lot of position. And one thing which is nice is that when you would be sitting on the chair, your body will permanently play with the chair, a little bit like you would be surfing. Not something that your mind is controlling, your mind doesn't think about it. But the monkey inside
again,
you
the monkey.
Is getting it.
Yes.
Instantly. And so the monkey is moving on the chair, kind of surfing on the chair, is very happy on the chair. And that's the thing. I have to say that I believe like the design practice needs more and more performance. Sometimes I find it totally... Once I've been designing a TV for Samsung. When I designed the TV for Samsung, for the first time, I've got so many people writing on internet or things like this, saying, I like the TV, or I don't like the TV, or things like this. Also, for the first time, I was designing something that people had a point of view about it, even before seeing the design. So like, some people say, I want a TV. No, I don't want a TV. At least it was a subject like people would have an interest in. Most of the time, a table, a chair, a carpet, a sofa, nothing. Nobody thinks about it. Nobody gives a shh. Eventually. We really need to find solution. We need to find solution for better performance. Sure. Better performance for our body, better performance for manufacturing, making things more lightweight, making things more easy to identify.
More welcoming.
And again, I can see sometimes a little bit too much of easy good taste in design. You know, some very beautiful wooden chair, but unfortunately too small, not very comfortable, not stackable, and also a little reactionary in the basic thing, because they just come back to the very old thing. And sometimes you see this kind of environment, yes, you've got a perfect wood table, you've got four wood chairs, perfect, and then you've got a beige carpet, and then a beige sofa, a candle, and then a tiny wood, a tiny paper lamp, and things like this, and you say, you as a family that have no kids, yes, you just never pour coffee, or you never do something wrong. It's just like, but if you never do something wrong, it might be a little bit boring in a way.
Absolutely, so, agreed.
So, mint is based on the movement.
Great.
Don't pour your coffee.
Now we take a little break and get back to this in just a little moment.
Yhteistyössä Helsinki Design Week.
You're listening to Helsinki Design Weekly for just a few more moments. My name is Anni Korkman, and today with me in the studio I have Erwan Burulek. Today is the first day of Helsinki Design Week, a big festival which I'm happy to also work with. It's on until the 15th of September. I know you must have visited many international design festivals. How do you see the role of design festivals for you as a designer?
Well, there is really one thing which is always very beautiful with furniture design, because most of the design festivals are furniture design, is furniture is something that has been a lot resisting to the idea that you would order it on internet and getting the day after with Amazon delivery. Most of the furniture are still something in which you go into in a shop, you speak with the people, you are touching the textile, you are thinking twice if you're getting it or not. Most of the design festival also linking everybody on site. Everybody's there. And it's good that those people are, let's say, all together, and you can meet them. Me, I've got, I take the occasion to say thank you to everybody selling things, because production depends on it. And my revenue also depends on it. But also magic depends on them, which is this kind of explaining to the people.
Presenting the ideas.
Yeah, presenting the ideas, and plus also explaining the difference between polyester and wool. Explaining the people between this wood to this wood. Explaining the people many things. And yes, when you're acquiring a piece of furniture, most of the time it's a companion for quite a while. So it's quite worse, you know, like thinking about it. I mean, it's not like it would be so ridiculous to make a kind of advertisement of showing somebody on an app and say, hey, ChatGPT, could you help me buy a sofa? And ChatGPT say, yeah, I just paid it. It's on the way. You're getting it tomorrow. Mm. No. And yes, why not? But it would be so. One of the best things with Design Festival is really meeting the people behind. Most of my work take place inside the furniture industry. And furniture industry, honestly, you can't compare it with tech industry. You can't compare it with many things. It's very... Most of every piece of furniture is still relatively unmade. Okay, it's made in a factory, it's organized, but still, when somebody is kind of putting the textile on top of a sofa, he needs to make it properly, very well done. And most of the time, people on site, they are the one conveying, let's say again, it's a goodwill of the maker.
Yes.
And this, that's the beauty of the life, the goodwill of the goodwill of the maker. So most of the design festival, they speak about local people, and
important.
That's important, basically.
Thank you. I have to say, I agree for obvious reasons. Thank you so much, Emma Bolek.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for the conversation. And thank you for listening. Kiitos, että kuuntelit tämän Helsinki Design Weeklin jakson. Helsinki Design Week -festivaali alkaa tosiaan huomenna ohjelmistossa 150 tapahtumaa. Kannattaa tutustua niihin osoitteessa helsinkidesignweek.com. Ensi viikolla kuullaan taas jostakin muotoiluun liittyvästä aiheesta. Moi moi!
Yhteistyössä Helsinki Design Week.